Hello and welcome to the Uplifting Content Podcast. I'm your host and the founder of Uplifting Content, Ione Butler. And in each episode, I'll be speaking to a special guest about a topic that matters. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is the wonderful Kerry David.
Kerry, how are you?
I'm really well, Ione. Thank you for asking.
My pleasure. So Kerry and I were introduced by one of my best friends, and a few days ago I was invited to a screening of her a documentary that she's made called The Will to Live, and it blew my mind. We're going to talk about it, and I had to interview her for the podcast about this film because I think it's something that everybody should see, because to me, learning about this man he is somebody who I am going to aspire to be and aspire to live my life with his principles by. He's someone that dealt with depression, which is something that I talk about a lot, and just learning about how he's overcome it and what he's done. I just have so much love, and I think I posted about it. This is the epitome of the movie is the epitome of uplifting content, which is what this platform's about. So anyone that is wanting to find something that uplifts you, please check out this film. So, Kerry, hi.
Thank you for that fantastic, fantastic introduction.
My pleasure. We've been talking about how us as Brits can't introduce ourselves very well, but we can definitely introduce other people.
Definitely.
So I've just done
living
that.
Proof.
Yes. So I love to start these episodes with the guests introducing themselves and just sort of telling the audience a bit about you and your work, and then we'll get into sort of more about the film.
Okay, so I'm a filmmaker and a philanthropist, and I have recently finished Bill Kaur's The Will to Live, which I only just gave a beautiful, beautiful summary of. And I'm currently working on a film called Breaking Their Silence, Women on the Frontline of the Poaching War, because that ties into my personal passion, which is to protect all the animals on the planet. And I do that through Over and Above Africa, which is a nonprofit that I have.
Which I'm featuring in the Uplifting Stories book, actually. We've just done another interview for that. So you're just amazing.
Oh, stop.
You are amazing.
Bring it.
You are amazing. Take it. So tell me how this film came about.
So Bill Kaur's or Breaking the Silence?
Bill Kaur's.
Mm-hmm. It was really...
We'll do another interview when the poaching thing's out, so don't worry, we can get onto that one then.
It's interesting how it came to me, because no other project has come to me this way. So I have a consulting company. In between films, I do consulting, and I've done that for years.
Kerry David Cock, what's your website?
It's kdcfilms.com.
Yeah.
It's also kerrydavid.com, take to the same place.
Gotcha.
And I got an email, and it was from a woman saying that they were trying to make a documentary for a man called Bill Kaur. I'd never heard of him. British. You'd never heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
And that they had fired two production companies and they wanted some consulting.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I thought, oh, it's going to be a hard one. I'm going to have to go and tell them that you're the problem. If you fire one production company, we have a conversation. But if you fire two, they probably
the common denominator here is you guys.
Exactly. So that was the conversation I was going to have. And we arranged to have the conversation with Bill's attorney, who's a woman, and Bill's biographer, also a woman, as Margot Hamilton and Natalie Winnegar. And I thought, oh, how progressive. I love that this guy has two women representing him. I got on the phone with his attorney, and the biographer hadn't gotten on the phone yet. So we did the girl thing. We just chit-chat. Mm-hmm. She was in Wyoming, and I said, oh, you're a horse rider. And we started bonding over horses. Unbeknownst to me, Margot had actually gotten on the phone and had a horse, and mm-hmm. so I was listening. And mm-hmm. then suddenly the first conversation for about 30 minutes was about horses.
Yeah.
I said, okay, you're on the clock. So you want to talk about
horses? Yeah, I can talk about some time. Pay for it.
And I said, so, you know, they told me that the first production company, the job was too big, and they basically threw the towel in. And the second production company had gone in a direction that Bill had not wanted to focus on, which was all about the brewery. And there's enough out there about the brewery. So
for anyone that might not know, Bill Kaur's was
mm-hmm. Bill Kaur's was a titan of industry, and he wasn't the founder of the Kaur's brewing industry, but because that's his grandfather, but he bought it through a time whereby the company could have folded, but because of Bill's ingenuity it didn't, and it's gone on to become what it is today because of Bill Kaur's. And I think you'll find that all the family would back that up too.
Mm-hmm.
It's now Kaur's Molson, I think, or Molson Kaur's, which is also another family.
Oh, interesting. So the second production company wanted to focus on the brewing company.
And there's so much out there about that.
Right.
I could understand why they didn't. So then I just said, well, I'm your perfect audience because I'm British and I know nothing about Bill Kaur's or the Kaur's family. So why don't you tell me about him? And so Margot launched into, as his biographer, and mm-hmm. knew everything about him, launched into this phenomenal journey that this man had been on on his own, that just his journey, but then what he had, and you now know because you've seen the film, but the absolute tragedy and trauma that he was able to come back from whilst understanding he had a condition that back then wasn't named. There was no such thing as depression back then. And so he went on a 25-year journey to find out what was wrong with him and heal himself holistically while dealing with these tragedies in his life that were unfolding. And then also he went on to change world history twice. So to me,
what were the two things?
So he invented recycling.
Invented recycling, as you do.
And then he actually, I have to tread carefully on this one, because he created a part for that was the, he was the only person who could make the atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. What people don't know is that Germany was very close to having the atomic bomb, as was Japan, and whoever was first to the table with the missing elements would have won that war. And it was, as everyone now knows, was America that we won the war through that that awful bombing in Hiroshima. But he developed a porcelain that was able to withstand the heat. And so, but Bill didn't know this.
And he didn't know what it was being used
for. He didn't know it was being used for, because the absolute secrecy surrounding the Manhattan Project was legendary even today. And so he, in effect, ended the Second World War and brought peace to the world, you know, where we could start rebuilding again. But that element that he created went on to be used in medical equipment and has saved countless lives, and it did so much good. So, yes, it did enormous damage, if you could say that, but he did end the war. I like to think at the end of the war.
Right.
He had a very peaceful message.
So, the biographer's telling you the story.
Yes. And then, you know what she had me at? And she said, and then he was at school where Einstein was his teacher.
He went to school with Einstein.
And dropped the mic. Anyway, after this, it was a very long conversation. To this day, I don't remember how long it felt, maybe a couple of hours, where we were just talking. And I sat back and I just said, look, here's what I would do with it. And I told them that there was this incredible speech that Bill gave in 1981 that was so progressive back then that it is still relevant now. Wouldn't you agree
with
that?
Oh, it's a beautiful speech. Beautiful speech, yeah.
And so in essence, I said I would wrap the entire film around that speech, and then I would bring his biography, because 100 years, it's a long time to sort of do justice to a life. But then what Bill's strongest message was that he didn't want that 25 years journey where he didn't cure his depression, as we've talked about. He found a way to manage his stress so that he could live a productive life and then go on to change world history, as he did. But he wanted to impart that message to students struggling with what he struggled with. And so in the film, what I try to do is show you the juxtaposition of students today talking about their stress and anxiety and depression. And I juxtapose it with Bill's own journey when he was the same age, dealing with exactly the same issues, and with this 100 years between them, that nothing has changed. And so something has to give. But one of the biggest challenges of the film was, what do you leave out and what do you bring in and still have an emotional impact on somebody and still do justice to this man, still leave a legacy for him, still impart the wisdom that he wanted to give these kids. It was a lot in the edit bay.
And you did a fabulous job in an hour and a half movie. And I think it beautifully, I think the juxtaposition worked beautifully, because like Harry was saying, you've got these young kids talking about depression and what it feels like and their experiences, cut with exactly the things that, that Bill was going through, and then how he kind of overcame it, and literally such a pioneer of kind of introduced fitness centers into the offices so that people would start to exercise in a time where like that just wasn't a thing. One of the most powerful things was he introduced a mammogram center into his offices so that all the women that worked for the company could come and get mammograms. And one of the first women to go through, it was discovered that she had breast cancer and went straight to, you know, and got treated for it and has been cancer free for like 30 years because her boss decided that we need to take care of people's women's. Just the fact that somebody, and like just so many things. And this is why for me, he is a person that I just, whenever I kind of feel like I'm losing my way a little bit, to be like, what would Bob do? You know what I mean? Like, just and I'm just going to read, because I was taking notes throughout the film, because it's beautifully kind of broken down into Bob's life's, I don't know why I keep saying Bob, Bill's life's lessons, and from the speech and stuff like that as well. so beautiful. I have my notes. The first one was the importance of love and being loved. And for me, dealing with depression and things like that, when you don't feel like you've got those that relationship, that closeness with people, that causes a lot of depression. Money is not the road to happiness. We're all, that's to me, completely our problem with the world.
Yeah.
That everybody is geared towards making money, having things will make you happy, and it's just not.
No, yeah.
Because if that was the case, every rich person would be happy, and they're definitely not.
Yeah.
So extend the arm of friendships. For me, one of the ways I deal with depression is just to surround myself with the people I love and spend time with them.
Yeah.
So like 100, like all of these things, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Do your own thing, which is beautiful. Like follow your own passion and purpose. Don't be forced into doing something for family or pressures or other things. Be true to yourself. And again, I can't tell you how much I love this movie, because I talk about this all the time in sort of relationships. And like, I was in a relationship with a guy and I loved him dearly, but I just knew that it wasn't for me. And I kept saying to myself, you can lie to other people and you can pretend to him, but you can't lie to yourself. Like, right. I cannot lie to myself and say this is what I want when I don't want it.
Yeah.
And that was an element of the film as well. Don't you, be true to yourself. Overcoming negative emotions. I talk about this all the time in videos about depression, ways of, you know, how to deal with things like that. Managing stress with healthy choices. Again, like exercise, meditation, being in nature, like, he did all of this. And then leave a legacy was the last one. So I just beautiful. Just, I just wanted to, yeah, just go over.
I love it. I could do this all day. I just like what was your takeaway now? Like, is there something where you're thinking you didn't know going in that you can use coming out of that, seeing the film?
I think for me, not particularly, just because all of these things are kind of in my sphere and they're all things. What I love is that it was just so beautifully brought together. And what I love more than anything is that I was introduced to a man who, like, because, you know, with Uplifting Content, I just interviewed you for the book. It's all about championing people that are doing remarkable things. And, like, you know, when you learn about people that are doing inspiring, incredible things, it makes you want to be a better person, which is exactly what this movie did, make me want to be a better person. And the fact that you introduced me to this man who I had no idea about, who's done so much stuff, I'm like, oh my God, literally my idol. So I want you to tell me about what happened the next day after the screening on Friday.
So Bill, when I met Bill, he was 100 and he wanted to make a documentary. So if anyone ever says to you they're too old to start something, you can say Bill Kors made a documentary at the grand old age of 100. There's no such thing as being too old. We had, I would say, extraordinary premiere. It went incredibly well. It was really well received.
It was a beautiful evening. I had such a great time.
Thank you. I thought the same thing. And the next morning I woke up to a text from Scott Kors, who's Bill's son and in the film, saying that Bill had quietly passed away in the night. And, oh, I'm just getting shivers right now telling you. And it's hard. He's 102, so it's hard to say that, you know, it wasn't coming. But I felt like his will to live, that he was able to see it through to literally the birthing of his legacy out into the world, because it premiered in Santa Monica that night, and that he was, that was all that then, and there was nothing actually after that for him to sort of, we hadn't pegged anything after that. There was no date to live for, right?
Yeah,
and I think myself, we should have put a date or something.
Give it to something else.
Christmas benefit or something. But, you know, that was the one we were building up to, this big premiere. We did launch the first premiere in Denver, and he actually came to that and gave the most phenomenal speech. And to 1,000 people at Denver University, it was packed. I'm thinking 5 people would show up. This is a documentary. He's that beloved, and he's from that area. So, yeah, so the next day he passed away, and that was yesterday, which ended up being a very quiet day, and a really thoughtful day. And like you, I think of him all the time in choices that I make.
Mm.
And he was such a lead by example person, but he was not a boaster.
Mm-hmm.
He could have been British.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, we've been talking about how just as Brits, we're just far too humble for our own good. And it seems like Bill was in the same way. And so he talks about when he was at boarding school, he had a very strict father, and sort of just felt obviously just rejected and not loved, and went to boarding school, got sent to boarding school, and was kind of didn't have any friends at boarding school and got rejected by his friends. And he had a very strict teacher that had kind of was just always laying into him. And one day he'd asked a guy to be his friend and the guy said no. And so he ran out of class crying, and this very strict teacher put his arm around him. And that moment just, you know, and brought him to sit down in a coffee shop and have a chat, and just that reaching out changed everything for him. And that teacher was called
Mr. Norman Hatch.
So tell us about the humble thing.
You'd have to see the film as I only just explained. Norman Hatch he absolutely picked on, he called Bill the Black Crow, mm-hmm. as opposed to all of the other guys being swans. I suppose he was a crow among swans, is what mm-hmm. he said. And so Bill was in fear of him and had failed miserably in class that day and left and embarrassed himself by bursting into tears on one day when he got picked on by Norman Hatch and was mortified. So he runs off, and as you say, Norman put his arm around him, and Bill took that moment of his life and he emulated that. And throughout life, whenever he saw somebody who needed an arm around their shoulder, he made sure he was the person to do that. And this isn't any person, this is a titan of industry. This mm-hmm. is like the CEO of the ship or the captain of the ship. And so towards Bill's later in life, after Norman Hatch passed away, he donated $1 million to the Norman Hatch lacrosse field. And I put that in the film. And I showed that cut to Bill, and the only note I got back from that cut was, please take that out, because that feels to me like it's boasting, and that's not my intent for donating that money, and sums him up, you know.
Yeah, it's just lovely. And again, that thing of there's so many people going through things, and you can change somebody's life just by reaching out to somebody and asking them if they're okay. Yeah. And like sitting down with them and putting an arm around them. And like, that's something that we all have the capacity to do just by just having an awareness and compassion and just...
And to that point, you know, when you put an arm around somebody else, you're not just doing them a favor. It
makes us feel good.
We feel better for it. We physically get a rush from doing that. So it's actually very symbiotic. So
yeah.
And I think, you know, I think that's part of Bill's message, which is it's so easy to reach out and we don't think to do it.
Yeah.
And we all know that kid at school who doesn't have friends.
Yeah.
You physically are probably thinking, all right, I've got my friends, so I'm glad it's not me. No, change that thinking.
Yeah.
You reach out and bring that person in and find something that you have in common with that person. Just make that person feel loved, because otherwise that person has the potential of turning into the Columbine situation.
Yeah. You know,
and
being,
they have nowhere else to go.
Yeah. Wow. Mm. That's a really great point. Yeah. I get really upset by like the exclusivity of things, because I felt that kind of rejection at school. And so for me, I try as much as possible to include everybody. And if I'm doing group things, just sort of putting it out there so that everybody's, I'm not, you know, not asking anyone. And I think we can make a conscious effort to do that more. So you said that it was difficult because there was so much putting the movie together, but what was the process like for you over those 2 years?
It was the only contract I've ever had where time was of the essence was actually a clause because of Bill's age and getting the film done. And I felt that, I felt the weight of it. I felt very much that we had, the more I learned about Bill, the more I wanted to get his story out there. You know, it was like a learning process for me. So of course I had Margot's summary of what she had learned from him. But then when you go through it, you're rifling through all this archival footage, or you're seeking more of it. And it's just extraordinary. But within that, you're also, he had a mandate, and his mandate was he wanted to impart this knowledge. So that was sort of, I had to always keep defaulting to make sure that it would be a helping tool in many ways to whoever would watch it. But at the same time, as a filmmaker, I want it to be emotional and have an arc and have it go somewhere and tell a story. So the process was, my editor, Mark Zambrano, and I worked, we were in that for 12 hours, 14 hours sometimes, because that's, we were just so engrossed in it. And then, you know, I trusted Mark so much, and I would say to him, this is what I want, this is what I'm feeling. And so the next day he would come back, and he would have even further gone and explored and come back and said, well, what about this? So it was this continual, it was like Christmas, unwrapping Christmas presents, you know, you're just like gems, but you felt the ticking clock.
Right.
So it was, it was definitely a process. And then it was, how do you bring in these kids of today to watch a film about a man who's over 100 years old? Because it's not It's not Superman. It's not, you know, it's not Batman. Yeah. It's not a Marvel movie.
Right.
And yet I think it's really important for these kids to understand this, what this man went through, and appreciate it. And like you say, maybe emulate moments of it that works for them. Mm-hmm. And so I had this idea to bring in YouTubers. And what I did is I brought it into the screen really small. And so I kind of wanted the audience to be watching this film. And then suddenly there's like a small screen of a young kid today. And we've just been 100 years ago, like, this doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. But as the film unfolds, that actually, every time I come back to a young kid, it gets slightly imperceptibly, one might say.
That's a great point. Yeah, you did do that.
And so by at the end, the kids are full screen and you realize, oh, wait, no, this isn't a different story. This is exactly the same story. And as you said, what happened to Bill 100 years ago is still happening today. These kids are still struggling with anxiety and stress. And so it was just a message of something has to give. And so Bill's messaging is, here's what I did. This is what worked for me. And I would say that all of those things will work for kids today as well.
Yeah, so. And they 100% would. And these are things that I live my life by, and that's why I think that it's such a great movie, because when I had to deal with depression, the reason I started uplifting content is because I would try to find content that would uplift me, and I would struggle. And I found two movies on Netflix, I Am and Happy, with documentaries on that. I don't know that even both of them on there now. Mm. And I was like, I just want to watch something that can help me find hope and just kind of guide me through this journey. And this film is that. Like, there's this, like, all these kind of life lessons and the way that it's told, like, there's just so much that helps it's absolutely brilliant. So you had told me what the plans are for this legacy part of it, and just sort of what Bill wanted. Can you share a bit about that with the school program thing?
I'd love to. So I was asked to make a documentary about Bill Cause, which I did, and it's an hour and a half long, which is pretty standard for documentary. And along the way, Bill's biographer and Bill working together have put a curriculum together so that the school, schools across America and then hopefully around the world, can actually have an entire curriculum, which is around basically what you're saying. Watch this film. It'll give you ways in which to have a conversation starter around you for people who don't understand if you're stressed, anxiety ridden, or depressed. It's also great for parents to be able to, who have identified that their kids are struggling and don't know how to reach out to them, to be able to sit down and watch it together. Can I just go off on a little bit of a
go for it, tangent away?
So we played at the Vail Film Festival, and a friend of mine, she said, can I bring my daughter? And I said, you know, is it suitable for my daughter? I said, how old is she? And she said, 22. And I said, oh, it's perfect for her. It's made for her. Bring her. So we watched the film. It was packed house. And as the lights came up, I leant over actually to see if my friend liked it, and her daughter streaming.
Wow.
And I just said, I just reached over and I said, will you just share with me what's going on with you right now? And she said, I want everyone I know to see this film.
Wow.
And my friend later told me she had been struggling with depression, and I had no idea. Mm. She was going to bring her daughter so she could come see the film. And then at that same screening, another mother and her daughter came up to me who I didn't know and said, the mother was suicidal just 2 weeks prior.
Wow.
And the daughter now understands what the mother was going through, so it flips it as well.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so powerful. You never know what is going to touch somebody when you make a film. I mean, what I pulled from Bill was that he reduced love and the act of love into such a palatable, understandable way in which I could process it in my own life, and that I do that now. It's like that love isn't, and it's an outward motion. It doesn't have any kind of a, there's no strings attached. It's not, I love you because you love me. It's just, you
unconditional.
Know, unconditional love. It's just, I can love you without anything coming back. And it's a powerful position. You're not waiting for something to come back or disappointed that it doesn't come back, because you've just had the act of feeling loving. Mm-hmm. So we each get whatever we get out of it. I know I went on a tangent.
It's all right,
what,
go for it.
What was I talking about prior?
You were talking about the program for school kids.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So they're putting together a curriculum. I'm actually going to cut the film down to 60 minutes so that it can actually play within a class schedule. And then it will tour around, as I said, all the schools in America and then hopefully around the world.
So brilliant. And I think if you know that it's already affecting young people in the way that it has.
Yeah.
And from my own experience talking about depression, all I can say is just as soon as you start to open up and share these stories, it allows, gives people permission to open up themselves and reach out and connect. And that's just what people need. Like, it's so heartbreaking to know that so many people suffering in silence when so many people around them feel exactly the same way. It just seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it's like, why don't we just sort of come together and heal and sort of shine a light on this?
Yeah.
Rather than just kind of,
that's what I loved about what you did when you had, and I, we talked about this earlier, when I saw how vulnerable you were talking about what you were feeling and the way you were expressing it, I thought there's probably more people that are actually suffering from depression, stress, or anxiety than are not actually in the world. Yeah. Right. And that you have given it voice. And there's this beautiful woman talking about, because on the outside, you have it all, right? You're stunning. You're beautiful. You're in Hollywood. You have a beautiful career. Everyone loves you. But we don't know what's going on inside of somebody. Right. And so when you are able to stand in your truth and say, this is real for me, and it doesn't matter what you project onto me, that you may think all those things about me, but that I don't think those things about me, and I'm struggling with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, coming back to being British, self-love is not something that we're taught.
Exactly. I know. And I noticed that I was saying to Kerry, I want to start a group for British women because I'm noticing how much American women can just sort of sell themselves with, and there's just completely fine. And as Brits, I just feel really cringeworthy about it. When I first moved out here, I realized, you know, I was getting into spirituality and personal development, and there was mantras like, I love myself. And I just remember just feeling like, oh, that sounds horrible. Like, why is that a bad thing? Because I'm English and you are obnoxious and self-indulgent for saying you love yourself. And it's so damaged. Like, I get it. Like, being humble, yes, it's nice to be humble and gracious. Yes. But when it gets to that extreme whereby you are feeling like you can't love yourself and that you can't sort of stand in your truth and be proud of your accomplishments and tell other people what you're doing, then it goes the other way and it's actually now destructive. Detrimental.
Yeah.
So we definitely need to work on that.
Maddie in the movie, Maddie Limburger, she is, I think she's like 18 when we meet her, and the way that she says to practice self-love, like, if you don't love yourself now, you're never going to be able to love somebody else purely and properly because you have to love yourself. And I wake up every day going, how do you start loving yourself? Like, what is that process? Is it saying, you know, that's a great podcast. How do you love yourself? Is it something where you say, I did a good deed today, I should feel good about myself? Because that doesn't sound
for me. For me, a lot of that stuff is to do with the mind and ego and understanding, because a huge shift for me came when I read The Power of Now, which is about Eckhart Tolle. I talk about all the time.
I love that movie. I mean, that book.
Yeah, it is realizing that our thoughts, our ego is not who we are. And so my thoughts were, I hate myself, I hate myself, I hate myself, I hate myself. You're ugly, you're never going to make it, you're going to die alone, no one wants to be with you. Like, those are all the thoughts that were constantly running through my mind. That person thinks this about you. You're never going to get there. Like, why am I not where I want to be in my life? That was the constant stream. And that was what was causing me depression and blah, blah, blah. As soon as I understood that that voice is not true and that I could switch it off and I could change it to different things, that was when my life changed. And that was when the self-love came back. And I remember consciously thinking, if you can repeat the mantra, I hate myself, I hate myself, I hate myself all the time. And I would, you know, I'd think of something that I'd done and be like, oh God, I hate myself. And it would be instant.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, stop with that. Replace it with, I love myself. And it just took a little while. Every time I would catch myself doing that, I hate myself, I hate myself, I love myself, I love myself. Because as easy as it is for you to, I mean, it's been a lifetime of conditioning yourself to think these self-deprecating horrible things.
Yeah.
It's taken a lifetime to condition yourself to do that. But if you conditioned yourself to hate yourself, you can just as easily condition yourself to love yourself, but you have to make that choice and you have to be aware of what's happening.
Yeah.
So for me, that's where self-love comes from. It's that, oh, you know, you really screwed up on that audition. I did the best that I could with that audition.
Nice.
And I'm going to take classes and I'm going to keep getting better and I'm not perfect and I'm going to keep growing and learning, but I'm going to enjoy what I'm doing.
Yeah.
The relationship didn't work out. You're going to die alone. No one's ever going to want to be with you. That person wasn't the right person for me.
Yeah.
There is a right person that's waiting for me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work on me and be the best version of me to attract the right person for me. And in the meantime, I'm just going to enjoy living my life. So as soon as I started changing, so for me, self-love is just an awareness of these thoughts that we're having and changing the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves to more empowering ones. And for me, that's how I manage the self-love.
Yeah. That is huge. And that would be a life, that would be a life journey for me, because I'm like at this age learning it, but I think that's what I can do. I can totally turn that around.
What
is it about being British that we're conditioned to sort of like just be such like naysayers? And
I don't know, but it drives me nuts. And it's one of the reasons that I wanted to move to the States, because here everybody is so everyone's like, you've got an idea, and everyone's like, great. You know, it can be this like huge, big dream, and everyone's like, great. In England, oh, that's not going to work. Oh, I wouldn't do that. And it's all about the money, or it's a scam. You know, everyone's just always, and I think, it, you know, they're doing it because they care, and they're doing it because they think they're helping. They don't want to, but it's just that everybody's got such a limited belief of what's possible.
Yeah.
And I reckon partly it's to do with the weather. I think that's a big part of it. Something to do with just culture. But I kind of am curious to get to the bottom of it. But that's one of the reasons why I wanted to move over here.
I love that too, that positivity. Like, even if you were to get a new car here, you could actually say, oh, I got a new car. Because like, you saved up for it and you got this new car.
Yeah.
And you could show it. In England, you'd say like, oh, you know, it was the last one they had.
I can't possibly be excited about getting something. Yeah, I know.
But here, everything is so much more accepted and approved. And like you say, it's like buoyant.
I do love that. So just to wrap up with, can you tell us where, just about like where people can catch the film and
Definitely. So we're playing in Santa Monica. We opened on the 12th. So we're there for this week. And then it's just limited release. And then we are in Denver. We open in two theaters, one in downtown Denver on October the 19th. And we're playing there for a week. And then November the 1st, it comes to Amazon and other platforms, which I'll announce later. When everyone's seen it at the movie theater.
Go to the movie theater, please to see it. It was just beautiful to just to support, you know, this type of filmmaking and stuff.
Thank you. It's huge. And to have you say such beautiful, authentic things that make me feel incredible. So thank you for that.
Oh, but it's like that girl said, the girl that cried. Like, it's one of the, there's a few films that, there's another one called Unity by Sean Monson, which I watched that movie and it's what made me become a vegetarian. Instantly, I haven't eaten meat since. There's a few films that I watch that I'm like, every human being needs to see this. And this is one of them. And Entity was one of them. So thank you. Saying it because I mean it, and please go and see this film. So Kerry, thank you for introducing me to Bill and inviting me to the screening and just being you.
And thank you for everything that you're doing, and your uplifting content is so uplifting, and I can't wait to you're so beautiful. And I can't wait to lift you up in some way, and the way you've lifted me
you
up.
Already so are
you. Oh my god. Such a lovely morning.
Or afternoon. It's a Sunday.
Feels like, morning.
All right, guys. Well, thank you. I will be back soon.
Take care.
Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Uplifting Content Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast and find it uplifting and inspiring, please leave us a review on iTunes. If you take a picture of your review and email it to us at info@upliftingcontent.com, we will send you a little gift to say thank you. Also, to make sure you never miss a beat, subscribe to my email update. I promise I won't spam you, and I send less than one email a month on average. You can find the sign-up link in the show notes. See you next Tuesday for another episode. Bye.